Good afternoon. Welcome to the Healthy Aging Show. I'm Dennis Patuas. She's Tracy Taylor. John Perry is pushing buttons.
Pushing buttons.
Not pushing your buttons.
He tried to push.
I know how to push his buttons.
He knows how to do it. We're going to be talking about healthy aging, intelligent aging, lessons for life, and we are brought to you by Comfort Keepers, where nationwide and in many English-speaking countries of the world, we provide care to enable people to stay safe and independent in their own home. You know, driving with you this morning...
It was a treat, as always.
You were reminiscing. No, I don't say...
Her sense of comic timing is beautiful, man.
I know, but I wouldn't say this particular one was a treat, or all of them are a treat.
More like a trick?
It's an adventure, that's for sure. But you were reminiscing about your...
Last 20 years.
And speaking about how you were 20 years younger, and Chris and Jerry and all of the...
Kenny, yeah.
Kenny, we're all 20 years younger, and you didn't have gray hair. And
none of us had gray hair.
And it got me to thinking is that not what we're reading in this article, Demystifying Your Aging Parents' New Stage of Life?
It is.
There's an interesting article. There's a website called caring.com, caring.com, and Connie Matheson is their senior editor, and she wrote this article. And it's subtitled, Understanding This New Stage of Life Can Help You Improve Communication and Avoid Power Struggles. And I think everybody can kind of relate to it. I want to read this first paragraph. Those of us who are caring for elderly parents are often bewildered by the decisions they make and by their seemingly stubborn refusal to follow our advice. We shake our heads over their obsession with the past, their caution, and the glacial pace with which they make decisions and move through the world. As much as we love our parents, dealing with them can often be fraught with tension and frustration. As we try to bridge a communication gap as yawning as we've experienced with rebellious toddlers or teenagers. You know, that...
Well, there's a communication gap in between every generation.
Well, you're not a parent.
And it's frustrating.
You're not a parent.
I'm not a parent.
This is what any parent says of dealing with their children.
And now they're saying about it, about dealing with their parents as well.
But these are our parents. These are the people who shaped our lives. As I'm accumulating the articles for the new website, I found an article on Don't Parent Your Parent.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember that?
Sure.
They don't follow our advice. Now,
because we know better, right?
Well, I think I told you that there was a church that I passed recently, and on the sign in front that announced this week's
sermon
ministry, it said, I'm not young enough to know everything.
That's right.
Here we are.
Trying to
put yourself into a position where you are not frustrating yourself or at odds with your parents, but you have to put yourself in a position where you understand where they're coming from.
And where they've been and where they're going.
Now, there's a psychologist, Eric Erickson, who was quoted in here saying that humans go through distinct stages as they grow from infant to adult. And they're dominated by what he calls crises. And that is the conflicting impulses that drive us and facilitate growth. And it is by resolving these crises, thank you, that we are able to move on to the next developmental stage and eventually grow into mature adults.
That actually made a lot of sense to me.
It did.
About having to resolve the crises of one phase before you can move into the other. You got to have done with it.
Well, what I was looking for was a definition of developmental stages.
There isn't one.
Well, there is, because it turns out, I'm quoting him, it turns out that aging involves distinct developmental stages and that elderly people have pressing life tasks they need to accomplish if they are to end their lives with resolution and meaning. That's it. I mean, developmental stages are these pressing tasks of life. And it's like, I got to
finish my house before I die?
Well, whatever. I mean, it's like people said, I can't die. I got too many things to do.
That's right.
And
it's
the definition of who you are as much as how you want to be remembered.
Well, they got into talking about legacy.
Exactly. There was a quote that we had found of a woman who was in hospice. And actually, this was a hospice nurse that was quoted. And she had interviewed a number of hospice patients and asked if they were afraid to die. And the most compelling comment I heard was, no, I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid to be forgotten. And there you go. I mean, how many of us want to leave this world with no remembrance of us?
I was going to spray paint my name under the bridge in East Haven.
There well, you go. Come on, who would look?
You better do it nice because people will think poorly of you if you use, particularly if it's pink.
No, I'm choosing my colors very carefully, and I'm going to spell it right and everything. So
that's an interesting thought. You know, nobody wants to be forgotten.
Exactly.
You know, that's why we all need to realize that we're here for a reason, and we've got something to do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know what I mean? And you better figure out what it is while you're still here.
And you got to find your mission.
You got to find your mission, and you got to bury some of the bitterness, and
exactly.
You've got to start looking at.
I like the bitterness.
But that when you were reminiscing, the bitterness hadn't grown 20
needs to
years
be.
Ago.
I was 22. I wasn't bitter at 22. It took until at least 25 to become old and bitter.
but it really is. You know, why are we here, and how will we be remembered? And I think that when you read this article, that's what so many people are dealing with. And until they can get to a point of comfort, and if they can't get there themselves, then they need some help.
They need to force their children to do it for them.
To bring them through it. This, I thought, was very interesting. There's a woman by the name of Mary Pfeiffer, and she wrote a book called Navigating the Emotional Terrain of Our Elders. And she argued that the inevitable or not, the losses elderly people endure can be devastating. She says that many elderly people exhibit symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, the same affliction suffered by many soldiers returning from war. The elderly, she says, are ordinary people, ordinary healthy people for whom all hell is broken loose. And even as they struggle to accept and come to terms with their losses and to hold on to what remains, older people are engaged in an effort to shape and understand their legacy, that is, to comprehend what their life has meant and the memories that they will live on after they die. And I have 2 minutes left.
3 minutes.
3 minutes left. Oh, thank you.
Less than that now.
Okay. How can we help? She, I think, has well set out what the problem is, and a lot of it is in communication.
Well, a lot because of problems in the entire world are miscommunications.
Well, why do our clients, when you're trying to be logical and rational in your discussion
like yesterday we had a call from one of the caregivers, and she said that her client, we'll call her Mrs. Smith, was having trouble with her eyesight, and it wasn't her eyesight, but it was something else, but I'll just say eyesight. She made a doctor's appointment, and when it came, she only made the doctor's appointment under duress because her son and the caregiver both insisted and insisted and insisted. And so, fine, they made the doctor's appointment. And then the day of the doctor's appointment comes around, she says, "I'm fine," and cancels the appointment, which leaves the son frustrated and the caregiver frustrated because it's not fine. The problem is not fine. The problem has not gone away, but she refuses to go to that doctor's appointment.
Well, one of the examples that is given in this article is just that. And the question is, what's really going on here? And she surmised was that this person doesn't want to know that they are failing.
Doesn't want the bad news.
And
that's
as
right.
This could mean more restrictions on their lifestyle and loss of independence. And I think that we've discussed this numerous times where when someone calls our office, an older person, and seeks our assistance, inquires about our services, and schedules an appointment for us to come out, and then miraculously, the day of or the day before the appointment, they call and say, "All is well, I don't need you. Thanks. But no thanks."
It happens a lot, yeah.
And the reality is that once they've made that first call, it's a call for help. And it's denial that things are momentarily better, but there was
a crisis.
That warning sign that there was a crisis. And in all likelihood, that's going to reappear. But the fact that when they admit us into their lives, it's an admission that they have come to a point where they can't do things and therefore they are going to lose some of that independence, and it's frightful.
Devastating.
In any event, John is doing this crazy dance because I think it's the run out of time dance.
The wrap it up dance.
And so we are wrapping it up for the first half, and we'll come back for the second. Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Aging Show. And before we let this go, I want to stay on the topic of the first half and just talk about what you can do to enable your parents to help them through this transition and give them some calming peace so that they can
check move, out inside.
They can move on and feel comfortable that they will have a legacy and they will be remembered and knowing what the issues are that bother them. The author, again, is Connie Matheson from Caring.com, and
one of the things that I thought was really interesting was something that I can relate to in that whenever I've gone to, you know, see like an elderly relative, I used to have aunts and uncles that I would go visit, all they would talk about is their back hurts, this hurts, that hurts, they can't see, they're having problems with their hearing, and then they move on to the neighbors, and the neighbor just had a heart attack, and this one down the street has cancer, and the one across the road, you know, fell down and broke his hip, and this and that, and Oh, my God.
You get to be that age. All your friends are that age, and they're all having those problems.
For hours. I mean, what's going on with that? You know, they torture me for hours with everybody sick and dying. And I feel sick by the time I leave.
What does Connie Matheson say that that reveals? It means that they are, because of their issues, they're fixated on health issues. And this was part of the trauma, the post-traumatic stress disorder. And quite frankly, if your neighbors and your friends have worse issues than you do, it makes you feel better.
Oh, yeah, because I'm still sitting at the kitchen
table
able to talk about
it. You're still able to do what you're doing.
That day, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. But how do we, as children of elderly parents, deal with this without frustrating and getting angry when there's no intent, I think, on the part of the senior?
I don't think they do it to annoy us.
They don't.
I don't think so.
But such as talking about moving them into a safer environment because their house is too big and they're prone to getting into trouble, and maybe you want to talk them into going to assisted living or
moving in with you.
And they talk about, they start drifting back to when they bought the house and how they looked for the house with your mother.
A good school system and you were just a kid.
And what they're doing is they're kind of putting into order or into some sense of order, this whole process that this is the place that now I've got to leave. It has been my home. It's where I've raised my family. And I can't just walk out the door, turn the key, and never look back.
You ungrateful child, you.
Exactly.
Yes.
So Connie's suggestions for how to sidestep power struggles with elderly parents was, first, to make time. There was a term that I had heard from one of our clients in a nursing home, and it was, yeah, that son of mine, he's really great. He sees me, he does a drive-by visit about once every 2 weeks.
A drive-by visit.
She said, well, he drives by, and he just about waves. He stops in for maybe 2 minutes, and then he's off because he's got something else to do.
And do you think the 2 minutes really meant 2 minutes, or do you think it was just... I mean, 2 minutes to her could have been 2 hours, but it wasn't a satisfying amount of time.
It could have been 2 minutes.
It could have been two minutes.
I've been there. I know I have had relatives who have been relatively close, but my schedule, you feel this guilt that you've got to go and see them.
Time is the most valuable thing in the world.
You just jump in and out of their life for that momentary. It made you feel better. It didn't make them necessarily feel
better. And your sense of time is different than their sense of time at that point.
So rather than doing a drive-by or stopping in or phoning for a short conversation, she's suggesting you carve out a longer block of time where you can have a meaningful discussion and let them talk. Let them talk about the issues that they want to talk about, and that may reveal some of their underlying concerns. And you can take that and do something more with it. Now, you'll love this one. Listen.
Oh, no.
We had somebody that worked for us that did that all the time.
Or now we're going into the traumatic shock.
Okay. Make sure to take time to really listen to what they say. You may find that a seemingly irrelevant point indicates a concern, and encourage your parents to reminisce and pay careful attention to the story behind the story. So you got to listen.
You got to be a detective.
Ask good questions to try to help them gain more understanding of the experience by asking open-ended questions, and then consider creative ways to help them shape their legacy. You could do a project with them, a photo album, write their story. Write a book.
Or do an oral history.
Get the tape recorder or video history. But it will help them move on to the next thing, which we're going to do now.
Please subscribe, recommend, and visit our website, healthyagingshow.com. Thanks for joining us at the Healthy Aging Show.